Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in today to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare delivery and technology. My guest today at the Tate Chronicles is Dr. Colin Bonas, who is the Chief Medical Officer at Dr. First. Dr. First is now in its third decade of providing solutions to the healthcare community, addressing such issues as information silos, care collaboration, medication management, price transparency, and adherence. Dr. Bonas, welcome to the Tate Chronicles.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jim.
Quite a few things I want to talk about with you in our time together, but let's first talk just about e-prescribing. E-prescribing was a giant step forward in terms of the medication process. I can remember when e-prescribing first alleviated the burden from providers to having to handwrite prescriptions and then record those prescriptions and those kind of things. But there are quite a few other factors that can benefit from technology beyond just the e-prescribing. So first, I'd like to hear your thoughts on really medication management from the provider side. I know there are things like medication history and, find out what other providers may have prescribed with patients, things like that. So what are some of the things that technology has allowed us to do in the medication world from the provider side?
Yeah, sure. And I think the starting point of e-prescribing is very apropos. In fact, that's where Dr. First cut its teeth as a company with being pioneers in the e-prescribing space. And you mentioned this this idea of getting rid of the paper and the benefits that come from digitizing the prescription, whether it's legibility, which is, of course, super important, all the way to the decision support that you're able to provide the prescriber at the point of making these decisions. So, you know, allergy checking, drug-drug interactions, et cetera. You know, despite, you know, decades of requirements and adoption around the digital workflow, especially in e-prescribing, the data itself can lose its structure along the way. It can lose its usability when you're trying to ingest it, whether it's at the pharmacy level to dispense the prescription, or whether, as you mentioned before, if I'm a provider and I need to know what medications you're on to do something like medication reconciliation, a lot of that data is lost in transit. And so at a minimum, one of the things that we're able to do at Dr. First is provide a very robust and gather all sorts of data points from where you might get your prescription filled or where other data might exist. And then using patented technology, we can turn that back into structure so that the system, the EMR most likely, is able to ingest it without requiring the provider to do a lot of manual entry. And so at a minimum, there's a huge safety equation right there in terms of, I know what Jim's medications are. I've gotten them back into my system accurately so that when I have you in my clinic or in the ER or I'm admitting you, I can do a safe and efficient medication reconciliation. So I think at a bare minimum, the fact that we're able now to get data back into structure is important. And most providers who aren't looking on the nuts and bolts of how this all works just assume that, well, I wrote it as an e-prescription and it was perfectly structured on the way out the door. So everywhere that piece of data goes from now on, it retains its structure. And that's just not the case. So again, I think the floor of what we're talking about in terms of efficiency and safety is structure, and the fact that interoperability is becoming more and more widely adopted. Well, I'll pause there to see if you have any thoughts. Otherwise, I can wax poetic about
Something that you mentioned there, you know, the need for that structured data. And obviously, one of the great benefits of structured medication data is to be able to do those drug-to-drug and drug-to-allergy interactions. You need structured data to be able to do that. That was one of the giant benefits of e-prescribing and have that structured data, is you could do that interaction checking. You know, one of the things also is access that medication history, that it's possible to pull down data, structured data on what medications have been prescribed by other providers. I mean, that's a giant leap forward in care.
Correct. And I think that's one of our crown jewels at Dr. First, is our ability to provide the most complete medication history in the industry. Because as we've seen, and as some of our research shows, when you get these medication lists incorrect, or you're omitting medications or including medications that are no longer active, that's how patients get hurt. That's how adverse drug events occur. That's how readmissions and prolonged length of stay occurs. And so getting the med list correct in preparation for MedRec is probably one of the most important things we can
do. You know, one other thing from the provider side, you know, you have you're prescribing for patients with different third-party reinsurance coverage for medication. And so the provider hopefully has some knowledge of the formularies that are covered by a patient's insurance policy. Is there any technology that helps know about the cost and the formularies for a particular patient and their third-party insurer?
There is, and I think one of the unfortunate things is not all providers have access to this data still to this day. But for most of the modern EMRs, there is the ability to, and that's a good first step when I'm making these prescribing decisions. You know, usually you'll see an icon that might say this is completely off formulary, and that might prompt you to go look for something else. But I think the next generation and the more important development within the last 5 years or so is the ability to see to the moment the exact copay that a patient is going to have when they go pick that prescription up. And so that's better than knowing if it's on formulary or not. That's me seeing, okay, for this medication, Jim's going to owe $25 out of pocket. But the software also will show me alternatives that are potentially more appropriate or less expensive. And so that is called benefit check or price transparency. And again, I think that's a much more important step forward in adherence and patient satisfaction at the time of making these prescribing decisions.
Absolutely. And you mentioned adherence. So is there any technology that allows the provider to know if a patient is picking up their prescriptions?
Yeah, it's actually one of the things that we work on as well. And so you can imagine as an e-prescribing company and also as a med history, two data points that are necessary to figure out if a patient has picked up a medication. So we will know if a prescription went out the door. And then later on, when we conduct these queries to find out what you've picked up and where, we can see if a medication has not been picked up. And so we actually have solutions that will show you, oh, this patient missed this prescription, or, oh, there's actually a calculation in the industry called PDC, or proportion of days covered. And we can tell for chronic medications, if you are not so good about picking up your refills, for example, because that PDC score will fall lower and lower. It's actually pretty robust, the ability to look at an entire list of medications and see, oh, you're not picking up your Lipitor. Can we talk about that? And those are the discussions that really help drive, again, patient satisfaction at adherence. Because you might come back to me and say, well, I'm not picking up my Lipitor because I can't afford it. And in fact, you referenced a survey that we recently did. We saw that about 50% of patients admitted to not picking up a prescription due to cost. And so this is where technology can really help bridge that gap.
You know, we're talking about adherence. One of the issues is patients who maybe have trouble remembering when to take their medication. I imagine there's, you know, in the old days, it was a pill box. And then I guess there's some apps on smartphones, but you know, that's part of it. You know, reminders for patients to take a medication. What's that?
Yeah, there's industry around adherence, and there's lots of potential solutions on the horizon. I think I've seen things like smart pill bottles that know when you've, you know, untwisted the cap, those assistants in your home that you can set reminders for, or as you referenced, personal apps. Dr. First even has an app in that space called Huddle. And the idea of reminders is just one step of the way there. You know, I've also seen developments all the way up to so that you can tell when the pill has been ingested. So there's the fact that adherence is so important, you know, a good 25 to 30%, depending on the condition of readmissions, can be directly linked to non-adherence. And so there's a big need to get patients on therapy and keep them on therapy. And I think technology is going to be an important piece of that equation.
You know, just as you were talking, I was thinking there are these streaming devices in people's homes, whether it's from Microsoft or Google or whatever, Alexa or whatever, and it's pretty easy to set reminders there. So, you know, you can say, tell me take a pill at 3 p.m. every day or 3 at 9 p.m. or whatever. And so I guess if for folks have those, that's a pretty good way just to have an audio reminder if they're in their home.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we also focus on as a company is who else is in the care team that can help with this task. So, you know, maybe it's not reminding the patient themselves through these technologies. Maybe it's reminding their loved one who they share the home with, or their son or daughter who is now the primary caregiver. And I think, you know, part of the freeing of information that we're seeing, whether it's in things like 21st Century Cures Act or, you know, information blocking, for example, the fact that patients have more control over their data and who can see it and who can access it can really help with a more complete care team approach to something. Uh-oh, Jim.
Okay, that's okay. Yeah, and I agree that care team approach, you know, is certainly a way to help get over that aspect of forgetting to take medications. For those who are just joining us, you're listening to the Tate Chronicles. I'm your host, Jim Tate. Today, I'm talking to Dr. Colin Bonas, the Chief Medical Officer at Dr. First. You mentioned that Dr. First recently conducted a survey on price transparency. How was this survey conducted, and who was asked, and who responded to this survey?
Yeah, we do this from time to time to keep a pulse on the industry, particularly at the patient level. This was a survey of 200 adults that we conducted via online, and it was about a 50-50 breakdown, and the age all the way up from 18 to 70 plus.
Wow.
And we basically asked them about their experience with price transparency, with adherence, and it was pretty shocking that still to this day, as I mentioned before, providers are not having these conversations with the patients up to 43% of the time, whether it's they don't have access to the technology or they don't realize that it's there. And of course, it all starts a big cascade. If you don't know at the point, if you're my patient and you don't know at the point of sitting in front of me that your Lipitor is going to be $100 copay, for example, and then you go to the pharmacy and you find out, you could decide to not pick that prescription up. And in fact, as I mentioned before, half of our and of course, I don't know that you didn't pick it up unless I had access to some of those tools I referenced before. And it could be months and months and months before I see you again and realize, hey, you never picked that prescription up. Whereas if I had known in front of, you know, while I had you in front of me, hey, Jim, this is going to be $100. We could have a conversation right there and say, you know, that's not something I'm going to be able to pick up. Is there something else? And then use the software to find alternatives or find different ways to help you get on and stay on therapy. So it was a pretty telling survey because for all the progress that we've made, we still, as a nation, have a massive prescription abandonment problem. The other thing that was really telling in that prescription is, in that survey, was patients admitted about 25% of the time to abandoning the prescription after the first fill, again, due to cost. So maybe they could swing it for the very first fill, but realize this is not something that's within my budget. I'm just going to go ahead and stop picking this up. And then the other flavor of that is about another half of those patients admitted to rationing their medications. So I might have written you for a 40 milligram Lipitor, but you want to make it last. So you start cutting your pills in half, but you don't tell me. And so again, this is unfortunate, but this is the reality that we're living in. And this is where those tools I referenced before can really come in handy.
We see these different offerings, apps or memberships or digital coupons to address the price. And even if you don't have access to those and you're paying full cost for a prescription, that cost can vary from pharmacy to supermarket to somewhere else. So there seems to be some access to some type of discounting or knowing price transparency. Are those legitimate things? Are there really discounts available? And how do people keep up with that? Yeah.
They are legitimate. And I agree that they're very difficult to keep up with. One of the things that we have in terms of patient engagement around getting patients on therapy is we have, at the moment the patient, the provider writes a prescription, we're going to wait about 5 minutes or so, and then we're going to send them a text message, the patient a text message. And that text message is going to deliver them into an app-like experience. We call it a microsite. It's not, we don't make you go get a new app. We don't make you do a new registration or anything. But this app-like experience actually will match the patient up in real time with cost savings opportunities that we have access to, whether those are pharma discounts, pharma programs, or even things like coupon cards that you referenced before. And we're gonna do that all on the back end and then deliver it face up to the patient. And we're saving them the hassle of having to search through those particular coupon websites or whatnot, because we're delivering it face up into their smartphone, and they can simply take that to the pharmacy and present it in the event that they would rather use a coupon or pharma savings option than use out-of-pocket or use their copay with their insurance. So those are definitely a newer development in adherence, and it's the industry trying to find a way to get patients on therapy and keep them on therapy.
We've certainly seen a lot of changes in the last decade or two around medication access, price transparency, adherence, compliance, all those things. What does Dr. First see going forward, developments we might see on the horizon in terms of these issues of prescribing, delivery, and compliance?
I think it's because of some real changes, and the term that the industry is using these days is consumerism, and I hate that term because I think the provider-patient relationship is a pretty special and sacred one. I hate to think of my patients as consumers, but I think the sentiment is correct in that patients are starting to expect the same experience in healthcare that they have in other industries, whether it's banking or getting on a plane or shopping. And data becomes more and more ubiquitous. And as patients are able to see more data, share more data, deliver more data, there's gonna be more and more innovations around this space of empowering patients to get on prescription therapy, stay on therapy, to understand their disease state more through education, et cetera. And so Dr. First really wants to be on the forefront of all of that. And so we're continually pushing providers things like price transparency and adherence solutions, but also, as I referenced before, innovating at the patient level to equally empower them to afford their medications and have these crucial conversations with their providers.
I know one thing that really is, I imagine outside the realm of this technology and process we're talking about. But typically, I'm kind of guessing, but I think it might be a true guess. When a certain dosage is prescribed for a patient, it is based on what maybe would work for a certain condition for 80% of the population. And so prescribing is not being done, it doesn't seem to me, in terms of precision medicine. So we're not really doing much precision medicine yet in terms of medication. Are we going to need genetic profiles and those kind of things to get into medication, precision medication management?
Yeah, you're spot on. And it might not be full genetic profiles. There's actually a field of medicine called metabolomics, or understanding how the patient specifically metabolizes certain drugs. And so I do think that is the next level of decision support that will be crucial at the point of prescribing to getting the correct therapy. I think a great example is, and this is probably a decade in the making now, but you can tell if you've got the precision profile or the metabolomics profile, you can tell which patients are going to be appropriate for which blood thinners. And of course, in the past, you know, when I was training, A, there weren't very many blood thinners to choose from, and B, you really didn't know until you put them on the one blood thinner you had and realized that it wasn't working. And now you fast forward over a decade, and, you know, before you even make that decision, you can find out, oh, well, I shouldn't even try this class of blood thinning because this patient metabolizes it too quickly. It's never going to have the appropriate effect. And that actually can save lives, especially for something as important as blood thinning. Because if you get it wrong, those patients redevelop clots. They re-present to the ER. They potentially, you know, they can die from recurrent clots. Whereas if I that pain and heartache and get the correct outcome.
You know, that's exciting, you know, to be able to look forward to that. I know there's a genetic profile that are being developed for antidepressants, because right now it's kind of trial and error what antidepressants might work for an individual. So that's definitely something to look forward to.
That's a perfect example. Yeah, that's another great example.
It's hard to believe, but we've totally run out of time already. So to our audience, thanks for joining me on this episode of the Tate Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest today, Dr. Colin Bonas of Dr. First. Dr. Bonas, thanks for coming aboard today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Jim. Anytime.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.